Hello, everybody. This is Parshas Chayei Sarah. And the Parsha begins with the Ptira, the death of Sarah Yimenu. And Rashi, on the spot, comments the fact that the Torah put the death of Sarah right after the Akedah. Last week's Parsha ended with the story of the Akedah. And this week's Parsha begins with the death of Sarah. And Rashi explains, based on a Medrash, that Sarah died after hearing about the Akedah of Yitzchak. And she got so afraid, she basically had a heart failure, and she passed away. And the Medrash says right there on the spot, that Messiah Yaakov expounds on it over here, it says, the Medrash says that Yedeya Hashem Yimei Temimim, that Hashem knows the days of Tzadikim, of Temimim, and that of course, Sarah Meina didn't die early, she didn't die because of some kind of bad happenstance. She was supposed to die at the age of 127, but Hashem for some reason chose to make it that it happens this way. The question is, what is the reason that the Torah is trying to tell us that Hashem chose to make it happen particularly this way, in this seemingly very tragic way, that Sarah dies by hearing the news of Yitzchak's Akedah? What's going on? And Rav Daniel of Kelm, he said a very beautiful explanation. He says, we say in davening every night in Ma'ariv, we say, v'haser satan, remove the satan, milufanenu, from before us, umile'acharenu, from behind us. What does it mean to remove the satan from behind us? Before us, that makes a lot of sense. A person wants to do something good, and the satan always gets in the way. He throws obstacles in the person's way. The satan makes it difficult to do a mitzvah. But how does it mean acharenu? Once you've done the mitzvah, what does the satan do? So he explains that the satan, he doesn't give up. Even after a person has done a mitzvah, the satan goes back to the person, and he makes it difficult for the person, and he makes it appear that by doing the mitzvah, the person, he's lost out in life. Things are kind of harder now because he's done that mitzvah. And he wants the person to regret doing the mitzvah. Because the satan knows that if a person regrets having done the mitzvah in the past, the person can chas v'shalom lose schar that he got for doing that mitzvah if he comes to regret it. And that's why the satan keeps trying, even after a person has done something, to make it that a person should regret it, so a person should lose out on that schar. And that's what, you know, someone suggested, maybe that's why we find that saying that no good deed goes unpunished, is that it's the satan. The satan keeps trying to make sure the person is going to regret doing a good deed. And that, says Rabbi Daniel McKellum, is what's going on over here as well. The satan's trying to make Avraham Avinu regret the Akedah. Avraham Avinu passed the utmost nisayon, one of the hardest nisayonis of all of Avraham Avinu's 10 nisayonis, of bringing Yitzchak for an Akedah. And now, the satan wants Avraham Avinu to regret it, to go back on it. And he makes Avraham Avinu feel that maybe he was the cause for Sarah Yimenu's death, chas v'shalom. And Avraham Avinu has to struggle his whole life believing that nothing bad could come from keeping Hashem's mitzvahs, and it must be that it would have happened anyways. And that was Avraham Avinu's struggle his whole life, to overcome this test that the satan put in front of him of thinking that maybe he had some cause in Sarah Yimenu's death. And this just gives us a whole new appreciation for what Avraham Avinu had to go through, and who he was, and what he passed that made him so great. And it should really work as a lesson for us, whenever we do something great, to never start rethinking it afterwards, that we shouldn't have done it, and to recognize that, no, that's the satan trying to get us, and we should keep remembering that whatever we did, if we did a good thing, it was right, and nothing bad comes from doing a good thing, and everything that comes up is just a test, just another nisayon, and if we pass that, we'll only get more schar. The Gemara tells us that once Rabbi Akiva's Talmidim were falling asleep. They were dozing off, as happens sometimes in shir, you can go long shir, and they were dozing off, so Rabbi Akiva wanted to wake them up. So he said an interesting thing. He said, you know, Sarah Yimenu lived 127 years, and that's why she merited to have a great-great-granddaughter, Esther Hamalka, who ruled over 127 medinas, city-states, countries, as it were. And the obvious question is, what's the connection? It worked, everyone woke up, and was like, what? What had that come into the middle of Baba Kama? But the point is, what is the connection of 127 years of Sarah and 127 Medinas that Esther Hamalka ruled over? And I heard once an explanation, I don't remember where I heard it from, but they gave a muscle. You know, in baseball, after every baseball game, so a baseball game can take around 2 hours, 2.5 hours, 3 hours sometimes. They can take a while. But after the game, they announce, besides the amount of time the game actually took, they say the playing time, means the actual time in the game that was actually spent playing. You know, baseball has a lot of pauses between each pitch. There's a lot of advertisements. It's the reason why it's an American sport only. And the actual playing time in a game could be only a fraction of the actual length of the game. When people live 70 years, 80 years, 90 years, 120 years, that could be how long they lived. But how much playing time did they have? Some people, they accomplished 30 years worth of life in their 120 years. Some people, maybe they accomplished 50 years. Sari Menu, says the Torah, she spent every second, every year of those 127 years was spent accomplishing something. And that is why Esther, her great-great-granddaughter, was able to rule over 127 Medinas. Not more, not less. Every second of Sari Menu's life was used out. There was no year that was a bad year. No, every second, every bit of her life was used out, and she fulfilled all 127 years. And something to always think about ourselves as we go through life, how much time is spent as playing time? How much time are we using to actually accomplish something? And how much time are we just kind of sitting in the backseat and watching life go by? And we have to recognize that life is a gift, and every second we have should be used to the fullest and try to use it for the right things. Tara tells us that Eliezer was sent to go find the Shidduch for Yitzchak, and he took with him 10 camels, Migamale Adoinov, from the camels of his master. And the Mefarshim asked, what is this pasuk, Migamale Adoinov, from the camels of his master? Of course, he took everything from his master's stuff. What does it mean, Adoinov, the camels of his master? So they say that it means that his camels, the camels of his master, were unique. They looked different. Why? Because they were muzzled. Avraham Avinu's camels had muzzles, so they shouldn't eat from other people's fields. To control them, so they shouldn't steal. And the Ramban brings a Medrash. The Medrash asks a question. You know, we find in Gemara that the chamar, the donkey of Rav Pinchas ben Yair, his donkey was so to speak, frum, that it wouldn't eat even from things that were demai, from things that were a question if there's someone took off miser or not. That and the Gemara proves from here that a tzaddik, not only is he protected from sinning, but even his animals don't sin. So there are measures that asks, so if Pinchas ben Yair, one of the Amoraim, his donkey was so frum, it wouldn't eat food that wasn't taken off miser. So then would Avraham Avinu's camels eat other people's foods? Would they steal? Why does Avraham Avinu need to put the muzzle on them? What's the point? They're not going to sin. They're Avraham Avinu's camels. That's the question in the Medrash. So I saw the Das Torah from Ruchel Levavitz. He says, he thinks it's not such a good question. He doesn't say that. He says, he thinks the answer to the Medrash, he thinks the Medrash is trying to bring out is as follows. We find Avraham Avinu, by the story of Zdaim, Avraham Avinu says he's not taking any money from Zdaim. From a shoelace to a strap, he's not taking anything. And then what does he do? He makes a shavua. He swears. He swears to Hashem he's not taking a penny. And all of the Farshim ask, why is he swearing? He just said he's not taking. So the answer is Avraham Avinu doesn't trust himself. Avraham Avinu knows how strong the appeal of money is. And if he made a decision, he wants to make sure he's going to stick with it. So he makes a shavua. He makes an oath. And that's it. No questions asked. Nothing to talk about. No if, buts, or maybes. He makes a shavua. Says Yeruchim, Avraham Avinu, that's who he is. He's somebody who doesn't trust himself. And he doesn't trust his animals either. He knows that his animals are from. And he knows his animals aren't going to eat other people's food. But it doesn't make a difference. We put on a muzzle. And he makes sure that there's no chance of anything happening. There was once a person in the community, I was telling him about a certain rabbi in the community who had decided to get a kosher phone. And this guy said, come on, rabbi, look, this is who we need getting a kosher phone. It's all the rabbis have kosher phones, all the rabbis have filters, all the rabbis are going to these big, you know, get-togethers about protecting ourselves from the dangers of technology. That's not the ones we need to be worried about. It's the guys who are rabbis, who are, you know, doing stuff, hanging downtown. They're the ones we should be worried about. I said, look, you know, that's how it goes, right? The people who recognize the issue, who realize they're the ones who don't trust themselves. They're the ones who are afraid, and they're the ones who put in safeguards. You know, there's a famous saying, where angels dare tread, fools blunder blissfully. Those who recognize the issue don't trust themselves, and they take safeguards. And that's what the Apostle is teaching us. Avraham Avinu put muzzles on his camels. He didn't take any chances because he knew how serious the avera of stealing is. So I want to end off with one last vart. it says that Eliezer bowed down twice. It says once when Rivka told him who she was, and he bowed down over there outside in the street by the well over there, and it says Vishtachu Arza, and he bowed down to the ground. And then later, when he's at the house of Besuel, it says he bows down again over there. Sorry, there it says he bows down again. There it says Arza. The first time it doesn't say Arza. The second time it does say Arza. And the question is why? So the Meshech Chachma says like this. He says that the halacha is that a person is not allowed to bow down on a stone floor, except for in the Beis HaMikdash. Now, when Eliezer is outside in the street, there was no stone in there, just a dirt street. So Dira did not need to say the word Arza because it's self-understood. He bowed down on dirt, not on stone. When he's indoors in the house of Besuel, the Torah specifically spoke out that he bowed down Arza on the Eretz, on the ground, on the dirt, and not on the stone, to teach us this halacha that Eliezer was careful not to bow down on stone, only on dirt. Okay. Now the Meshech Chachma asks the obvious question. It says, if a Torah is coming to speak out this halacha, that the Avos already and their servants were all careful not to bow down on stone floors, why does it teach us, specifically in this random place where Eliezer is on a trip with Besuel, etc., why doesn't it tell us by Yitzchak, by Yaakov, by Avram in their house? Why does it teach us specifically here? He says something very fundamental. He says, because in the house of the Avos, you were allowed to bow down on stone. You know why? Because their house was like a Beis HaMikdash. The Avos, they were a Merkava L'Shechina. Each one of the Avos was, so to speak, a place where the Shechina rested in this world. And their house was like a Beis HaMikdash. You know, we always say that a person's mizbeach, a person's table is like a mizbeach, all that kind of stuff. With the Avos, it was very, very, very real. They lived a life where the Shechina rested in their house, and the halakha changed. In their house, you were allowed to bow down on a stone floor because their house was like a Beis HaMikdash. I was told once, I heard from Shmuel Kamensky, someone asked him, this lady, she built a very, very nice house, spent many years building a beautiful house, very expensive house, and she called up, she was very nervous. You know, she realized that Hashem Mashiach is going to come, and then she put all this effort into building a big, beautiful house. What's going to be with the house? What should she do? So he told her, you know what? Use the house for mitzvahs. Have parlor meetings there. Have Tehillim readings over there. Do good things with it, and then your house will become holy. And Yemrit Hashem, maybe it will come with you to Eretz Yisrael. Maybe it'll be holy enough that it gets to come with you. And the parasha is teaching us this idea that it's a real thing. A person can really elevate himself and elevate his house to the point where it can become like an actual Beis HaMikdash, to the point where the halakha changes, that a person is allowed to bow down on the floor. And this is a makom of Hashras HaShechina. It's all in our hands. What we do in our house, how we act, how we speak, what we bring into the house, all that can affect the actual Kedusha and the actual level of our home. Everyone should have a wonderful Shabbos.